What?
Hello?
Trick or treat!
What?
It's the Horror Virgin!
On Halloween!
Tom, I thought we turned the light off. Why is Jen here?
I don't know. People don't understand the codes. We don't have any candy for you for Halloween.
Well, we do have.
It is a very special Halloween episode for your earballs.
Some would say it's ear candy.
Ooh. I like it. So, guys, enjoy this very special episode of Candyman.
Yes.
Well, it's a very special episode of the Horror Virgin.
Oh, yeah.
Watching Candyman.
Very good point.
Yes.
Very, very good point.
We stand corrected.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, enjoy the episode. We'll see you on Monday for another regularly scheduled episode on The Shining.
We do.
Love you. Bye.
Spoiler.
Bye.
This episode brought to you by
Audibles.
Audibletrial.com/horrorvirgin for 30 days free and a book to get you started. For your book recommendation, Jennifer Ratu.
Hey, guys. So today I am recommending In the Flesh or Books of Blood by Clive Barker. He wrote The Forbidden, which is a novella in the Flesh, and that's what Candyman is based on.
So, guys, check out anything by Clive Barker on Audible, if it's there. This episode also brought to you by
Nick B.
Hey, Nick B.
Hold on. I got it. I didn't screenshot it, but I remember.
I even told you. I tagged you in it on Facebook and said, Mikey, screenshot this so you don't forget it.
I asked Nick how he met his wife.
Yes.
So, okay. It was a really romantic story about how he got blackout drunk at a bar, woke up with a woman's number, and called it, and then he married that woman.
And it was his wife?
Yeah, it was his wife.
So the moral of this story is...
Play the numbers.
Yeah.
Call the numbers.
Oh, call the numbers. Hey.
This episode also brought to you by John.
All right, let me tell you the truth about John.
All right.
Have you guys heard about this Hong Kong protest?
Oh, wow. We're going there.
Yeah.
We are not going there, but John went there. Do you know
why? Why'd he go there?
John owns a company that sells tear gas.
What? Wow.
John only invests in evil things.
But it's made him rich.
But at what cost?
At what cost, John?
Yeah. So his Australian tear gas that sprays off the bottom of the can.
Because it's from Australia, it's like, Jen.
Wherever people are fighting for freedom, John's tear gas will be there to try to stop them.
So does John, was he just doing this by himself? He like went there by himself and
no,
like,
no, oh. Of course not.
It's too big for just one man.
Right. It's a big job.
John's got a lot of money. He can spread it around. He's got a, you know, he's got a right-hand man.
And that's this episode brought to you by...
Michael.
Not you, though.
No, not
because
me.
Because you're Mikey.
Mikey
would never.
Right.
And Michael is a dick. Oh. So Michael goes as part of John's evil corporation, Inc.
Yeah.
He goes and teaches people how to fire that tear gas.
Oh, so he's like the person who like goes and shows the cops how to use the tear gas effectively.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the tear trainer.
Yeah, right. He's like, let's stand on the top of this building. You just fire it straight down at these people.
Because it fires from the bottom.
Right.
So you can stand above.
Exactly.
And it's all coming together.
Yeah.
Well, who's going
to... Yeah, I meant to say that.
Well, who's going to protect these people from this evil tear gas?
We need a hero.
This episode also brought to you by...
Some say Matthew saves.
Is it Matthew?
It is Matthew.
Matthew Mary Poppins down with his flying umbrella.
Yeah, so Matthew parasoled down...
Pardon me.
Down from above where the police were.
Yeah, like, and he's the one who taught them that with your parasail you can block that tear gas.
Oh, so he taught the protesters how to block the tear gas.
Oh, yeah. Did they all just open Mary Poppins' umbrellas?
So Cody Roy was there.
Yeah, this episode also brought to you by Cody Roy.
Yeah, but Matthew doesn't let him take the parasail. He has to, like, he took a flight.
he flew commercial. Yeah. I get it. Listen, you can only do so much.
Right.
Yeah.
They got a budget. They got to buy umbrellas for thousands of protesters.
And listen, that's what he did.
Evil pays better than good.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
Good's on a budget.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Cody Roy had a GoFundMe for umbrellas for protesters. And he distributed all the umbrellas, and then Matthew taught him how to use them.
So he did all the groundwork.
Yeah.
And then Matthew just took all the credit.
Yep. Mm. And then flew away again.
And just like every boss I've ever had.
Absolutely.
So it seems like Matthew and Cody Roy have foiled once again John and Michael's evil plan.
Thank you, Matthew and Cody Roy.
Yeah. Yeah. They at least cancel each other out. Yeah.
Chaotic good, chaotic evil. Yeah. Cancels each other out.
The whole city's in ruins, but you know. Godzilla saved the day, so.
This episode also brought to you by Rebecca.
Now, hey, Rebecca.
Tear gas causes Disney tears.
It does.
It did. But Rebecca's Etsy store
causes Disney cheers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I can rhyme too.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
And guys, check And check out Rebecca's Etsy store at Dre Don Tell Disney.
That's
on
right.
Etsy.
We tagged it in our feed, so you can go back a little bit and find it in our feed.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
Because she designed some sick, awesome Jen's fun facts stuff too. Oh.
Yeah. So, Mikey, do you have
who wants eye contact?
Appropriate pickup line. I always do.
Todd.
It's always me.
Always Todd.
All right, I got one. It's a country themed pickup line.
Well, howdy.
Rebecca, are you Australian? Because you meet all of my qualifications.
Okay.
Wait.
I thought it was going to end up somewhere down under, and that was my concern.
You guys always think
was good.
I mean, because
cute.
There's ample evidence to make us think that.
Yeah.
You guys always think my pickup lines are going to be so bad.
Mikey, did you hear our As Above, So Below
episode? I was just going to say that.
This is before it came out, or this is after?
This is after.
Did you say it was going to be country themed, though?
Australia is a country.
Oh, like, I thought you meant like country. That's why I sang.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like hillbilly-ish.
Woo-hoo,
well, you guys, some words have more than one meeting.
Yeah, they're called multiple meaning words.
This episode also brought to you by Carl.
Is Carl still murdering kids in the woods? What's
not
he up
that
to
I'm
these
aware
days?
Of. And I'll just say this, allegedly.
Allegedly. Yes,
we don't know
course.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And legally speaking, we cannot be held to account if he is or is not.
That's right.
Right. But we do know he does teach local youths guitar. And honestly, that's something he said to me in passing. I just like saying the words youths.
He said local youths?
No, I didn't. He didn't say any of that.
When did you guys pass?
We talk often, actually.
He's on the way to killing kids in the woods in the North Pacific.
I've never met Carl in person, but he used to watch me on Twitch all the time. So we've been friends for like 3.5-4 years.
Oh.
But we never met. Like we
your
bonded over
friends?
Video games. Yeah, we bonded over video games. Okay. So anyway, we talk, I don't know, a few times a week. He's a really good dude. Anyway.
Yeah, even though he murders kids.
Allegedly. Yeah. He also allegedly writes up on his work office board his like Halloween puns,
mm-hmm.
right?
And I took a picture.
Do you have one?
Yep.
Let's just give you guys an example of these banger puns.
Yes. Right, that you can get if you go into our Facebook group.
Into the Facebook group. So guys, join the Facebook group. While Jen's looking it up, join the Facebook group. It's just facebook.com/group/horrorversion. We link it all the time. Just go into our social feed. You'll see it there. Jen.
Why did the vampire join the police force?
Why?
So he could learn how to get a steak out.
Oh my God. I love it. They're punny. They're dad jokes.
They
and
are.
He is a dad.
Nice.
So it fits, you know?
Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't have said he murders children so much.
Well, maybe he's just not murdering children.
Well,
allegedly. Allegedly,
yes,
guys.
Yes.
Allegedly. So maybe we should allegedly bring in the theme
should
music?
We? I don't know. We got to get a lawyer first.
Maybe. I get one phone call and I'm calling the theme music.
Nice. There we go. It's not home, Mikey.
I love
it's
it.
With some other podcast. Welcome to the Horror Virgin, everybody. I'm Jen.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your Horror Virgin, Todd, which means I don't like scary movies, but you guys make me watch them, and then we discuss. This week, you guys made me watch the 1992 Clive Barker spooky spiritual slasher masterpiece.
Wow.
Candyman.
Nailed it. Spooky spiritual slasher masterpiece.
It is all
that
of
that was
things.
The first take, everyone. We did not
know.
Yeah,
I know.
That.
One take, Todd, lady.
What,
well, that's
we...
my thing.
I just said lady because I have one.
Oh.
That's not a flex. That wasn't a flex.
The one take. I'm talking about the one take.
So, have you guys seen this movie before?
Yes.
No.
So it was your first time, Mikey?
Yes.
Nice. Jen, when did you see it?
So I saw this movie at a slumber party in fifth grade, and it scared the shit out of me. Then I kind of liked the ending, so I was like, oh, maybe I'm not so afraid anymore. But yeah, this was one of the first, the earlier horror movies that I'd ever seen.
All right.
Yeah.
It pretty much, in my eyes, is just about a sexual predator ruining two women's lives and then dying.
You talking about the husband?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is. 100%.
He is the worst.
He is the worst.
I don't think it aged well, but I enjoyed watching it with y'all.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Jen, how do you feel about it? You've seen it before.
I have.
How do you feel about watching it today? Did it hold up well?
I love this movie. This is one of my favorites.
Is it like through the lens of nostalgia? It's your
partly,
favorite?
Yeah.
Like everyone loves A New Hope, the Star Wars movie, because it's the first one they saw, but it's really not the best Star Wars movie.
No, Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie.
And
Rogue One.
Yeah, Rogue One's by far the best.
No, I really like this movie. I'd say it's not in my top five, but it's up there. And partly because of nostalgia, but partly because I really like it a lot.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad.
I think scary-wise, it did not. not really age well. It does have that 90s, like early 90s kind of gore look to
92.
It.
Yeah.
Some things I think they did really well. Some things just haven't really aged that well. But I think when I look at what it's saying, I like it a lot more now.
I like the story. I just don't think it was paced well and it wasn't scary.
It is sort of all over the place pace-wise, but that doesn't really bother me too much if it's not super slow the whole time.
I mean,
it's
like
not,
when they zoom into the water and have a discussion in her mind.
Yeah. So like there are parts I'm like, well, we don't really need this. But a lot of movies in the 90s had shit we didn't really need.
Right.
So it is very quintessentially 90s.
And I also want to say before we start talking about this, we are looking at this through the lens of three white people. There are a lot of racial elements in here. I hope we do this justice and we can try to kind of see outside of ourselves. But if you think something else about it, please let us know. Like, I've done a lot of research and I've tried to read what people of color have written about this, but we want to hear what you think too.
Absolutely.
And we don't want to represent our views as the views of a community that we're not a part of.
So, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, all that being said, let's get into this fucking movie,
guys. Can we
get
into this movie? All right. So we start with our credit shot. And I swear to God, I'm going to start recording you guys.
Dude, the credits are horrible in every movie.
But this movie was okay, but also really terrible.
Yeah.
It's moving the plot along, though. Mikey did a reenactment.
That is straight out of the movie. That is the music from this movie.
For all you classical music nerds out there, it was written by Philip Glass, and he's a 20th century composer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, very like kind of repetitive mathematical feel almost.
You know,
to
he
it.
And Ira Glass are related?
Are they really?
I have no idea.
This movie's soundtrack was just the final boss fight in Final Fantasy VII.
Yep.
No.
The credits follow tiny cars.
They're not tiny cars. They're actual size cars.
We don't know
We're just from like a helicopter view following across the top of a...
Fun fact.
Oh my God.
That was the first time they'd used a Skycam like that, and it was really advanced technology at the time because it didn't hover and shake like that. So that's actually Chicago, and they are real cars.
You think they would have used more Chicago landmarks in a shot like that?
It's really bad. Like, it is really just an overhead shot of cars on an interstate for 2 minutes with
like
creepy
it.
Music. And then the like title cards or like the words would just slide in from various different places. It's the worst.
If you really want to know what it's like to watch a movie with us, it's just me and Todd making fun of credits and then Jen with her head in her hands for like the first 7 minutes of a film.
And then Mikey criticizing anything in a house. All right, whatever. Nothing happens. It's boring as shit. Let's get to the actual plot.
I like it. Okay, so we see our overhead shot of Chicago and then we see a bunch of like a swarm of bees flying up over the city of Chicago and we hear Candyman's voiceover.
That part did not age well, just a heads up. It did not age well. And but so, I bet back in 92, it looked cool.
It did. It scared me. A little 5th grade Jen was terrified. Okay, so we hear Candyman's voiceover saying, "They will say I have shed innocent blood, but what's blood for if not for shedding?" That doesn't sound like Tony Todd at all.
No, but honestly, if you have mesothelioma, you hate this movie because it's a lot of lip smacking sounds.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. It's because the way they made his voice sound like that is they crank the gain. He's talking very quietly. So you hear all of the mouth sounds.
Is
while
it
he's
mesothelioma? The
that's a skin disease.
That's the
right?
lung disease you get from asbestos.
You're talking about misophonia.
Misophonia.
Yeah.
You said mesothelioma.
You did say mesothelioma. The heartbreak of mesothelioma.
Lung tumors from asbestos.
Listen, I watch a lot of Fox News late at night.
Oh geez.
And I hear lawyers telling me I should call them.
So what catheter what is the best, Todd?
I was like, why?
Anyway, so like if you don't like mouth sounds,
I love mouth sounds.
Yeah, that ooh.
Like that.
You know what I'm talking about?
I'm Jen, sorry. I shouldn't.
That
I'm
sounds.
Vague. That never happened. Yeah. That was not me.
We just picked up 200 listeners.
Okay, so now we see Virginia Madsen and she's smoking a cigarette, and then somebody is telling her an urban legend story.
She's smoking a cigarette through the entire movie.
I know.
A little foreshadowing for the end of the movie, but when she's smoking that cigarette and that cherry gets really red, that's how she looks at the very end of the movie.
And there's one in her pupil at one point too.
Yeah.
We've cracked it, guys.
This movie is all about the dangers of smoking.
So she's smoking, and somebody is telling her an urban legend about Claire, who was babysitting, and she had a boyfriend, but Bad Boy Billy comes over, and
she had a boyfriend named Michael.
Yes.
Oh, did she?
She's like, I'm not going to have sex with Michael because he's too nice. I'm going to invite the motorcycle driving Nick or whatever his name is.
Billy.
Billy.
Mikey was very upset for the
he
first
was.
3 minutes
I'm
of the movie.
I'm not going to say what happened, but it did kind of trigger some past experiences where like Michael, the nice boyfriend, doesn't, you know, gets cheated on. But it's fine.
Mikey, it happens to all of us, baby.
Okay, so they go upstairs and she's taking her shirt off and they're in the bathroom and she starts to tell him the story of Candyman. And she says, if you look in the mirror and say his name 5 times and then turn the light light out here. He'll appear behind you with a hook for a hand and he'll gut you. So, of course, let's try this. It'll
yeah,
be fun.
Why would you ever do that? That's so dumb.
Candyman is not a real myth. Clive Barker made it up. So they look in the mirror and they're both, he's like trying to cop a feel on her while they're saying, they're hot saying Candyman.
It's so weird. She's like getting sexually aroused by Candyman.
Also, this is in a bathroom.
Yeah. No. Also, not their house.
Right.
She's babysitting.
Like, if you're going to hook up in somebody's house, go to the bedroom.
Maybe she's into dangerous hookups.
She is. That's why she's not sleeping with Mikey. No offense, Mikey. She's sleeping with Billy.
Right. Well, and so they say it four times in the mirror, and then she says, ah, ha, ha, no one ever got past five. And then she sends him downstairs. So they're not going to hook up in the bathroom.
No. And he just, it cuts to him on the couch drinking one of, I guess, the parents or the owners of that house's beers. Mm-hmm. So weird.
And so she's upstairs and she looks in the mirror and she seductively says Candyman one more time and then turns the light off and then he's behind her and he kills her. And I don't think we actually see him kill her.
We don't see him actually kill her, but we do see blood coming through the floor. Anyway, so the world's worst babysitter dies, but Billy doesn't die, right?
I don't think so, but
the baby also dies, whose only crime was having a shitty babysitter.
Exactly.
Wait, the baby died?
Yeah,
they said they killed the baby too.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, we don't see that. And that's one of the...
I missed that whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, like, as urban legends spread, they conflate, you know? So if this did actually happen, maybe the kid didn't die, but the next person who told it might say, and they killed the baby. And then the next person would say, and they killed the baby and the dog.
And like, they killed the baby dog and then Billy.
Right, exactly.
And they killed the baby dog, the Billy, and then the motorcycle died.
Exactly. Anyways. But that's how urban legends spread.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that this kill didn't actually happen.
It may not have.
I think because it's the only one that happens outside of the Greenville, Greenway.
Cabrini Green,
right?
Yes. Well, so then we pan back out and we see Virginia Madsen, who is Helen in this movie, still finishing her cigarette. And she says, thanks for telling me the story. And then she walks down the hall of a university and talks to her friend Bernadette.
Yeah, Bernadette.
And she's interviewing a guy who's talking about, I can't remember the urban legend he's talking about. So they're interviewing people and having them tell urban legends.
It is a different one.
Academic research.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, it's sociology. So now she walks into the husband's lecture and he's giving the lecture from urban legend where he's talking about the alligators in the sewers.
Who does the lecture in urban legend? Is it?
It's Freddy Krueger.
It's Freddy, right? Yeah. What's his real name? Robert Englund.
Yeah, Robert Englund. Yeah.
Something like that.
So she walks up to him after the lecture, and there's a group of students around him, but one whose name is Stacy is kind of hanging around him and giving him some looks.
I kind of got the impression that that group of students were like his TAs or something.
They might be, yeah.
Because the rest of his class just leaves, and they sort of hang back to talk to the teacher or whatever. Maybe they're just like overzealous students.
They're overzealous students.
Yeah, they might not be TAs. Honestly, you usually only have one TA, right?
Right.
So,
I don't know. It depends.
One time I got drunk and told my TA at a bar that I loved her.
Oh, my God. Mikey.
Inappropriate.
So how did it work? Did you guys date for a while? Or did you give her a D?
No, I did not.
Did you have to give her an A because you tried to give her a D?
No, I did not.
Did you get an A in the class?
No, I didn't.
Did you get kicked out of the university?
No, I did not. It was just a really embarrassing 20 minutes.
Aww.
And rest of my semester.
So Stacy's lingering and Helen's asking Trevor, like, why is this girl giving me the eyes? And why is she? And Trevor's like, well, I guess because she's madly in love with me.
Yeah, which she is because you're having sex with her, you monster. I hate this guy so much.
Trevor is an asshole.
Trevor is an asshole.
From Jump Street, from the first scene, she's like, oh, you're cheating on me, aren't you? Like, that is not dialogue. But that is definitely subtext.
Yeah. I'm
just a college professor.
I've definitely had these conversations with people.
Even though she was a student.
Yeah.
She's a graduate student.
She's a graduate student now, but they're married. Yeah. So they definitely hooked up when she took his class the first time.
Maybe.
This man is a sexual predator who just like uses his class as like a never-ending well of booty.
Yeah.
He's a horrible person. I fucking hate him. Because his wife is young.
You can rent a car now. On to the next one.
I'm out. You're in your 20s? I'm out. This dude's the worst.
Yeah, he sucks.
It may not be illegal, but it's gross.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely against university policy.
Listen, just because your TA said she couldn't date you because it's against university policy doesn't mean it actually is.
No, I taught her.
University policy.
I taught classes. I taught the how to choose a major class to undeclared majors.
What?
In grad school. But anyway. during the orientation, they were like, don't have sex with the students. If you do, don't trade them from grades. It was all very explicitly wrote down.
I like how there is a if you do segment. It's not just don't do it or you're fired. It's don't do it. But if you do, don't trade it for grades. So anyway, much like Mikey, this chick is in grad school. Where did we leave off? I'm so sorry.
Okay,
Jen.
We're in the lecture. And Stacey McCheats on Husbands is, wait, she's not cheating. She is the cheatress.
But she knows she is.
She does, yeah. Because she just met his wife.
Yeah.
So she's asking her about what's up with this Stacey girl. Also, you told me you weren't going to do this lecture until the next semester, and you just ruined all my research because I was talking to all these kids about these urban legends that they still believe, and you just told them all they're not true, and this is how they're passed on, and busted up all my research.
He's not very thoughtful.
Exactly. Well, and I think he doesn't want her to eclipse him in the university.
Oh.
Because they're in the same field, and she's kind of doing competitive research.
Which comes back later in the dinner scene.
It does, yeah. And it's a little more explicit with the Benjamin Franklin professor.
Yeah, I was about to say, it does come back in the dinner scene with younger Benjamin Franklin.
So now she's typing up her research.
She's more or less transcribing the tape to like her notes on her Doogie Howser computer.
Uh-huh.
So the tape, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we've got the Doogie Howser music playing, and then it's the interview that she just had earlier. So we sort of know what's happening. But it's playing, and then this cleaning lady comes in and says, oh, I didn't know you were here. Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I go ahead and clean? And then the main character, Helen, responds with, yeah, go ahead. And then the tape picks back up.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just paused perfectly for her to come in.
Right. I like this scene a lot because it's like, this is convenient plot stuff.
Oh, it's very quick.
Like, you talk about the Candyman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know about the Candyman a little bit. My friend knows a lot about it. And she's like, do you think your friend would be willing to let me talk to him?
Yeah,
and she's like,
hold on a second.
Hey, other person.
Yeah.
Come down. And like,
she was
like,
the cleaning lady down the hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like very, very quick. It's very, very convenient. And she doesn't acknowledge that it's convenient.
Right.
She's not like, oh, shit, that was really great. Like, that's awesome. You know,
that's the first thing I would say. Be like, oh, she's like right here. That's awesome.
Right. Well, and I also think it's interesting that she didn't consider interviewing these people. Ooh. She was only interviewing the students.
Well, I mean,
good point.
It also may be because that's just like the circle that she's in.
True.
But I mean,
and she hadn't gotten to that level of research.
And we didn't say it, but they are.
Yes, they are women of color who are doing these are these cleaning women.
I think this movie does some weird things with race. And I'm willing to talk about it, but it's odd.
I'm going
to
be uncomfortable talking about it the whole time.
I got it.
I am too, but it's weird.
Well, and so because I think this was a pretty divisive movie among the African American community. And I know there are some people that really love it and say there was a lot of representation, which is something we didn't see at the time. And then some people that were saying there are some negative stereotypes in it. And then some were saying, but it also humanizes more characters. So it's complicated. It's not a perfect movie. It doesn't say anything perfect about race, but I think it's an interesting one to talk about through that lens. And I've got a book to recommend about that at the end of the episode.
But like the rest of human history, every white man in this movie is horrible. Yeah. So it is sort of historically accurate.
Is there any good ones?
So our other cleaning lady comes in and she's talking about, because they're saying, oh, Candyman lives over at the Cabrini Green Projects. And this cleaning lady lives over there. So she comes in and they're talking. And she says some girl named Ruthie Jean heard banging on her walls. And she said someone was coming through the walls and she called 911 and they didn't believe her. And she called again and they still wouldn't believe her. And when they finally got there, she was dead and she had been killed by a hook. And they said that Candyman killed her. So they're all very afraid of Candyman.
I did love that she had just explained everything about that and said, well, I don't know anything about that.
I think that's this is off the record, right?
Everything, yeah.
Right. But I think it shows that they don't want to be on record as saying it, as talking. Like, this is a secret thing, and they don't want him to know they're talking about
it. And we see that from the boy that she runs into at the Cabrini Green. That's it. Because he doesn't want anyone to know about that, that he's talking either.
Yeah.
But I think that's because there is someone who calls himself Candyman who runs that gang who's outside of Cabrini Green. I think when they're talking about the Candyman, they just assume it's that guy.
This is
when it really is the supernatural slasher guy.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of both because obviously that guy took his name from the supernatural
because
slasher
it's a scary
guy.
Thing, right? But I think that boy is not afraid of a supernatural slasher. I think he's afraid of that very real drug dealer who runs that, maybe not drug dealer, but that very real leader of that gang.
So now she and Bernadette are talking about it and they're at her apartment and she has done some research on this Ruthie Jean case.
Yeah. She, and we saw there's like a quick montage of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then we talked about how long it would take if we didn't have the internet to do all of this research. Yeah. Let's just say we would not be able to have fun facts if we didn't have the internet. So she's got a picture of Cabrini Green and then another apartment building. And she's like, oh, I bet you thought that was the same building, didn't you? But no, this one is the projects and this one is my house. And she's talking about a real thing with housing projects. When they built that building, they originally built it as a housing project development, but they realized there was no natural border like a freeway to keep the people from the housing development from walking into the rich areas of Chicago. So they decided not to use it as a housing project. And so they just spruced it up a little bit and sold it as condos. And
put drywall over the cinder block.
Yeah. Put effort into making it look good, basically. Yeah. And that is a real thing that happens.
Yeah, it's called redlining. It still happens. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's saying that the floor plans are the same. So they go into the bathroom and they pull medicine cabinets out. And she's saying, look, there's no wall here. It's just two medicine cabinets back to back. And if I pull mine out and then I pull that one out, I can get into that house. And so that's how they were coming into the walls to kill Ruthie Jean. It wasn't really Candyman. It was a murderer just coming in.
Yeah.
And they called it Candyman. And so they do that. And I've always looked at medicine cabinets in houses and I'm like, wonder if I could pull that thing out.
Don't.
Well, I never would. Yeah. I'm not crazy.
That's property damage.
Yeah, but I thought that was interesting. I thought it was creepy, too.
It is creepy. And, it's used to great effect later on in the movie.
Yes, I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did push out the other mirror.
They see into the other apartment across the way, and then Bernadette tries to scare her. But nothing happens.
Yeah, right.
Then they put the mirror back, and Helen squeezes her finger.
Ooh.
And then they do the Candyman stare, where they look into the mirror and say, Candyman, 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 Candyman.
But Bernadette only says it four times because she's scared.
Right. But Helen says it again and doesn't turn the lights off, so they're fine.
Yeah, and we were asking why. Now, here's the problem that could be a plot hole in the movie, because at some point they would turn that light out. I mean, this is over the course of months. But I think she summoned him, and he just is going to choose to come whenever he wants to.
Just like a man.
Yep. Oh, my God.
Geez. But I remember thinking, we both were like, yep. I remember thinking when I was little, okay, if I just never turn my lights off. So later she's asleep, and she hears a weird noise.
Oh, I hated this.
I did too, man.
Another reason to hate her husband.
Uh-huh, because it's not Candyman. It's her dick husband jumping on her and scaring the shit out of her.
At least midnight.
Who's coming home late from work, quote unquote.
Yeah, he's Patrick Wilson-ing this.
Except he is actually having an affair.
Yes, he definitely is having an affair. There's no way he was at work.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So now they're going to Cabrini Green.
The one part I don't like about this is just like, it seems very... like urban touristy.
Yes, it does. The criticism of this movie is that they're exploiting these people in this housing project.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it that way. They're also just there to get information.
Exactly. And you can also look at the character of Anne Marie, where she's saying we're not all like that, looking at it as humanizing people that live in
this. I was surprised by that. Because honestly, in the early 90s, like the stereotypes of that community were like not Anne Marie.
Uh-huh.
They were the kids downstairs.
So they're walking around Cabrini Green and they get out. And this is one of the scenes that I didn't notice when I was little, but I definitely noticed it this time because they get out of the car and immediately a group of guys are catcalling them and whistling and say they look like cops. And I was like, oh, yeah.
They didn't seem like they were like sexually catcalling them. It was more like, are you guys cops? You got to tell us if you're cops. It's entrapment if you're not. And honestly, guys, that's not real.
Is it not?
No. If you're talking to an undercover cop and you say, you have to tell me you're a cop, they can just say, I'm not a cop.
Right, because it's only entrapment if you tell them to do something because you're not a cop, right?
Anyway, so they start going up the back steps, and those guys downstairs aren't going to hurt them.
They're
not going to try and sell them drugs or anything. Well, you say that, but they don't hurt them or anything.
No, they don't.
All they do is say, hey, cops are coming up the steps, the back entrance. And you hear people start to close doors and stuff like that because they're like the lookouts for whatever probably illicit activity is going on here.
Yeah.
And although we don't really ever see that.
No, we don't.
They could just be, you know, a Run DMC lookalike group who was outside practicing on that big boombox.
Well, they're not because later on they beat her in the bathroom.
That's fair.
Well, and so they're saying, she says, look, they think we're cops now. They're not going to follow us. I've got a lot of fun facts about Cabrini. You want me to just talk about Cabrini Green now here?
Do it.
Okay. So Cabrini Green is a real housing project in Chicago. It was built around the 40s, I think. And at its peak, it had about 1,500 residents. The show Good Times used the facade of Cabrini Green and was, I'm not sure if they ever actually said the name Cabrini Green, but that's supposedly where it was set. There was was a lot of crime, violence, and neglect because the city basically just didn't do shit in this apartment complex. And so, of course, when you're a group of people that's abandoned by your city and you can't look for protection from the systems in your city, you form your own systems.
Yeah.
So there would be like rival gangs that would control each of the buildings. And so there was a lot of gang war and violence there. The city didn't clean it at all. Like the power would go out, the water would go out. I read at one point the trash chutes got clogged up all the way to the 15th floor point. It's like rat and cockroach infested. It was just terrible to live in. And so I went down a really depressing rabbit hole of history. Yeah, at one point, the mayor of Chicago moved in for 3 weeks as kind of like a political stunt. And she left after 3 weeks.
Oh,
but
my God.
Yeah. So the last of the buildings was torn down in 2011, and it's now kind of a gentrified neighborhood. That's Cabrini Green.
Oh, and the sequel, they're going to be, it's going to be set in the same neighborhood, but in now gentrified Cabrini Green.
And so those are my not so fun facts about Cabrini Green.
Well, thank you for your premature fun facts.
The one thing I will say about that is a lot of residents, when they were tearing it down, said that the one benefit they got out of living in this like squalor basically was they formed a really strong community bond.
Oh, I'm sure they did because they didn't have anything else to protect them.
Exactly.
They had to.
And I went to
necessity.
Right. And so that was something that they missed because you're just living in such tight quarters and you're sharing so much because you just don't have anything. Okay, so she's taking pictures of the graffiti and she sees "Suites to the Suite," and that's a line from Hamlet.
Yeah.
And so she's taking pictures, and as she's taking pictures of a door, it opens real fast and a Doberman pops its head out.
And that's when we first see Anne Marie.
Yes, we don't meet her yet, though. She's like, oh, sorry. And so now they go into Ruthie Jean's apartment, which is right around the corner.
Yeah, it's on the same floor as Anne Marie, but it's around the corner.
And it just looks like it's been abandoned for 500 years.
It looks like it was on fire, and they just left it like that.
Yeah. I honestly got the impression that it had been tagged up so much, the walls just looked sort of black.
Right.
And it was just horrible. It smelled awful. Mm-hmm. Like, no one had lived there since she died, it seemed like.
Yeah, but I bet people had been in there because it's vacant space. You know? So they go in and they know the floor plan. So they go into the bathroom and they're taking the medicine cabinet off just like they did in Helen's house. And they're looking through and she climbs through because she's crazy and she wants to.
Yeah, it looks like creepy hobbit hole.
Oh, why would you do this? And Bernadette's like, no, I'll stay here. You have 5 minutes.
Yeah. So now there are holes in these walls. So she's walking into the other apartment and there's one hole and there's like all this tags all over the place. And she finds a bunch of candy on the floor with razor blades in it. And this was the one thing that kind of stood out. And I was like,
that stood out to you?
Yeah. I was like,
it's not making sense. Like,
it's not involved in the rest of the movie.
I agree.
Exactly.
There's like
nothing
way
in this.
No candy in this movie.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's the opposite of candy
like
in
candy,
some scenes.
Why do they call him the candy man?
I don't know. I mean, there is no mention of why he's called Candyman.
Right. And maybe that's why they put this candy in there.
Infuriating. Yeah. But it's just dropped in and no one mentions it again.
Right. And it could have been like this drug dealer person, the gangland person. Anyways, so then she walks through another hole, and this is really cool. This is one of my favorite shots of the movie. She walks through a hole and she turns around and there's a picture of Candyman on the wall, and she just walked through his mouth in the picture.
Open mouth screaming.
Yeah, it's really
cool. It definitely looks
cool.
Like serial killer lair.
Well, and is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it is. All right. So we cut back to Bernadette, who's seeing the creepiest doll ever. And it's depressing.
In the tub.
Too.
It looks like it's been on fire. Like it's horrible.
Yeah. And it's not only creepy, it's sad too.
Yeah.
This is just. And so then Helen jumps out and jump scares Bernadette and Todd.
Man, that scared the shit out of me. I've never been so mad at a redhead in my life.
This movie is not scary, but like the jump scares are the cheapest.
Then we see Anne Marie behind them and she's saying, what the fuck are you doing in here? Are you cops? Is this part of the suite?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Right. And so they say, no, we're just from the university. And then Anne Marie hears her baby crying and so she runs back and they just follow her.
And they just invite themselves into her place.
Right.
And in all fairness, Bernadette doesn't really. She just follows Helen in.
Right. And Helen is very brazen too, just kind of coming into places that, not that she doesn't belong in, but like crossing social lines.
I mean, she wasn't invited to Anne Marie's house. She does just walk in. It even signals like to Bernadette, come on, just go in.
Right.
And then they do. And then it's and Anne Marie doesn't get pissed at them, but I think she would have a right to get pissed at them if she did, you know?
Well, and she's saying, because they say they're doing a study. And so she's like, oh, you're studying people in the projects. You're going to try to make us all look
like
bad.
I did like what she said.
Though. I did too.
We all use drugs and stuff like that.
Yeah. And like, if you look inside her apartment, it's like clean
spotless.
And bright and nice and like a warm home, you know? And she's got her baby there. She says, all I want to do is raise my kid. And that's one thing that I do like about this movie is Anne Marie's character.
I like Anne Marie's character a lot.
I do too. So she's, because her apartment is like right around the corner from Ruthie Jean.
Literally.
She's talking about how she heard her screaming from inside the walls, and she was calling 911. And she said nobody came. Everybody's scared to go there. And that's part of what I mean when I say they live outside of the community. Because even if even the police are afraid to go into your community, you have no protection.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're also afraid of Candyman, because they know nobody is going to protect them from it. And now she's at Fancy Professor dinner with Benjamin Franklin and her terrible husband.
Young Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, pardon.
And terrible husband, yes.
And Bernadette. And they're all smoking. Bernadette.
Yes, they are all smoking inside a restaurant.
Yeah, which is insane. There's no way you can do that now.
And Smarmy Smarm Benjamin Franklin wants to review their work because he's in the urban legend field also, or the sociology field.
I mean, he did write a paper 10 years ago about Candyman specifically. And his character is like Exposition Dump City.
Yes.
And tells us sort of the myth of Candyman, because up till this point,
do you even know the story of Candyman?
Yeah. Then how are you going to bury me?
Because up till this point, you sort of think Candyman could very well just be that drug dealer downstairs, or maybe not drug dealer, but head of that gang, right?
Yeah.
So they start to like say, oh, we're still doing our research. We were just there today. We've got to compile some research before we write our paper. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, how are you going to bury me if you don't know anything about anything?
Right. Because he'd been a condescending dick to her. And she was like, well, we're going to bury you with our research, like challenging him back. So here's the legend. Candyman. And we don't ever actually say his name. It's all Candyman in the movie. He was the son of a slave, and his father had made a lot of money producing shoes after the Civil War. So he'd grown up in like polite society.
Yeah. He invented a machine to mass produce shoes.
Yes. So he was able to make a lot of money. And so Candyman grew up like affluently, and he became a really good artist. And he said lots of the wealthy landowners would want him to paint pictures of them so that they could like paint, here's how rich I am painting.
Well, you know? And also he's a very good artist.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So they just
wanted
him to paint stuff.
Yeah. Right. So he is hired by a wealthy landowner to paint a portrait of his daughter, who is white. They fall in love. She becomes pregnant, and the dad is not going to have it because this is right after the Civil War and it's all terrible. So he pays a group of people to basically lynch him without actually hanging him.
Yeah, but still, like, a group of white men murdering a black youth.
Yes,
right?
It's a lynch mob.
Whose only crime was falling in love with a white woman.
While being black.
In the 1890s. Yeah.
Exactly.
So the mob comes to kill him because he, you know, tried to
fall in love.
Falling in love while black.
Right. And so they cut off his right arm with a rusty saw.
Hand.
Well, like, up to the forearm. And so they cut it off his hand.
I assume was his painting hand. Like,
it was. It was his dominant hand.
That is his Banksy spray paint hand.
Yeah, but either hand, you don't want to get cut off.
And did they put a hook on it just to, like, humiliate him?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
They nail a hook into his stomach.
Yes, they do.
So they smear all the honey on him, and the bees sting him to death, which would be terrible.
So that's how Candyman dies.
So, and they scatter his ashes over Cabrini Breen.
Right. They never really talk about how he became a supernatural slasher.
No, they don't.
But, that process of the lynching may have done it or whatever,
right.
Or that's the mythology behind it or whatever, but they don't explain it.
Well, I imagine if you know that story that happened, it's like what happens in haunted asylums. I mean, they may not be haunted, but if you know a billion people died in this place, you're going to start creating these legends in your mind and think every time you hear a strange noise, oh, well, it's probably the ghost of these people, you know?
If you're Todd, yeah.
All right, so she's back at Cabrini Green by herself this time.
Yeah.
And she's trying to talk to Anne Marie, and then she sees behind her the cutest kid ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Jake is sitting out there, and he's the cutest kid.
He's adorable, man. He's got this cool little hat.
And she is very inappropriate with him, and she's like, I'm going to sit down, and I want you to tell me a secret, and I promise I won't tell anybody.
Yeah, and you're not too much of a bitch to not tell me, right?
Exactly. And
it gets weird.
Yeah, like, you're not too afraid to put yourself in danger by telling me where a rival drug lord's den is, right, kid? Yeah, my research is more important than your life.
So she gaslights this 7-year-old into giving up some information that he is afraid to give her.
Also, just kids, don't talk to strangers.
Yeah,
strangers
ever.
Don't need help from children.
No, honestly, if some stranger sits down next to you, child, kick them in the shin and run away.
Right, exactly. You're a kid, you can get away with that shit.
Yeah, and it's on them, honestly. They're the adult in the situation. They should know better.
Exactly. And hey, adults, don't try to persuade kids to help you.
Or get kicked in the shin, nerd.
Exactly. He can't say anything or Candyman will get him.
Yeah. And
so she gets to this outside bathroom.
Well, yeah, because the little boy takes her there and he explains that there was a woman across the way at like a shop or some sort. And the boy needed to go to the bathroom. And so she sent him across the way to the bathroom.
She was annoyed at him and he was intellectually disabled.
Which is not the word he uses. But remember, it was 92 and that was the word you're supposed to use. Yeah. We're not going to use it now.
It's the R word.
Right.
Hard R.
Yeah, it was a hard R. But listen, it's okay. It was 92. That was the medical diagnosis back then.
Now it's intellectually disabled.
Right. So the intellectually disabled kid goes into the bathroom, and then almost immediately they start to hear like someone getting slaughtered or whatever. And then they stop the mom from going over, but this big burly dude runs in.
And he comes out and his hair's turned white.
We don't ever see that part.
No, we don't.
Right. That's the urban legend part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the kid in the bathroom gets gutted in the gut, and then his penis
gets castrated,
and then like it's in the toilet floating, and his blood everywhere,
and he's screaming "mommy," and it's horrible. I almost cried when we watched this.
That's a rough order. Like,
and he survived, but he might as well be dead because who should survive after that?
Yeah, I can't believe he survived. Sad. Honestly, I mean, not just the John Bobbitt wound, but also he was gutted too. Like it's more than just that. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of blood on that floor.
Yeah. And anyway, so they're outside talking about this horrific act that's been done to this intellectually disabled boy, and so of course she's
Helen's like, "I gotta go in there and take pictures.
Check this out."
Yeah.
So she goes in this outside bathroom, and it is real gross.
So she goes into this urban restroom, which is like a terrible stereotypical urban restroom,
and it's disgusting.
It is disgusting. Yeah,
there's "To the Sweet" written on the wall, not in spray paint this time. "Sweet to the Sweet."
It says the whole thing. Yeah.
And it's not chocolate that it's written in.
That's doo-doo, baby.
It's the lumpiest. Like, something was wrong with this person's diet.
Yeah. This was a lot of people.
All of these people had a very interesting and specific diet and then liked to write in poop.
Lots of nuts, lots of corn.
Yeah. I watched part of this while I was
eating. Todd gagged at this part.
Yeah, while I was eating some Jimmy John's. And it was grossing me out. Yeah. There was a penis. It was a floating dick. Yeah. It was gross.
When I thought about rewatching this movie, this was the one scene that I did not want to watch again.
Man, it's rough.
So she like takes pictures of all the stalls, and we're joking about the nasty poop because Todd's gagging, and we're laughing, and I'm like, this scene's funny. And then like all of a sudden, the gang steps in, and it's a guy with a big black leather trench coat. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he pulls out a hook.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Heard you're looking for Candyman, bitch."
Yeah. You found him.
And you found him. He turns it, and then he gives her a mean right hook.
To the side of the face. Yeah, and then she goes down. And honestly, because you don't see, I mean, we do know because we watched the whole movie.
Right.
But like, you see her on the ground bloody.
I thought she was
dead. Me too. I thought I thought she was dead. I was like, wait, what?
It cuts to Jake outside. You hear like them beating her. And I was like, did she just die?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to her in the bathroom. There's just blood around her head. I'm like, she's dead.
Yeah.
Then we see a Candyman lineup.
Once I saw the lineup, I knew she wasn't dead because there would be no reason to do a lineup without her. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're all saying the line, and she sees the guy. Mikey incorrectly identified the number. Although I think you just got the numbers.
I think I got the numbers.
But it was like at the same time I had just said, you know, lineups are historically very inaccurate.
And then Mikey says, like, it's four.
It's number four. It's number four. And then and then she goes, it was five. And I'm like, suck it, Mikey.
And then it's like, very good. I was like, did I get the number wrong?
Mikey just sent an innocent man to his death.
Yeah. There's going to be a making of the murderer that you're like the subject of, but you declined to be interviewed for because you sent this great person to jail.
Mm-hmm. I just see pictures of you outside of your work, like running away from the camera.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm busy. I can't.
So, she's talking to the detective, and he reminded me a lot of Morgan Freeman in this movie because I
think he does a great job.
I think so too. And I love him because he's really kind to her right now.
Yeah.
She's got this giant, like, swollen eye. And he's saying, we swept the place because she's asking, how did you find him? He's saying, they swept the housing project. They started at the top floor and they just went all the way down, and it's all locked down now.
Yeah.
And that they've got him for killing Roofie Jean and that kid. She's saying, well, how come you couldn't get him before? They said, because nobody from that community would testify against him, but now they have you.
Yeah.
And she's like, what about Jake? And Jake's like, get me home, bitch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jake was like, where are my parents?
Right.
Why do I not have parents in this movie?
And he's mad because she said she wouldn't tell anybody that he was the one who showed her. Although, to be fair, Candyman himself did actually see him outside the bathroom. But now, like, I mean, his life is in danger now because somebody else is going to take that top spot.
I mean, and I literally said, does that little boy die? Because I'll be pissed if that little boy dies. Yeah. He doesn't, but you don't really see him that much.
You see him at the end.
The very end, but you don't really see him that much anymore. But I was glad they showed him at the end because then you get to confirm he's fine.
Exactly. Yeah. But so she's telling him Candyman's not real. And it's like in this conversation about how Santa Claus is not real. And he's like, what? Candyman's not real this
whole
time? But
who brings me my razor blade candy?
Exactly. And
why was the razor blade candy?
It's never, like, they never address it. It's so dumb.
But if you look at Candyman's motive, she is responsible for taking down this giant crime lord in this community and from kind of deflating this myth that they were all afraid of. And
which
so now,
I thought was cool.
I did too.
Me too.
Yeah.
I loved it.
So now she can say, this whole thing you've been believing, it's not real. you're just afraid, which is a little condescending.
Yeah, but I mean, she did prove that it wasn't real, quote unquote, cut to 10 minutes later in the movie. Oh, it was real. It's horrible. I mean, it's going to kill me.
It would be a really interesting paper, and it would definitely blow Ben Franklin's paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Douchebag Ben Franklin would have got buried.
How mm-hmm. I was researching an urban legend, and
the urban legend researched me.
Oh, and then I solved a murder.
Exactly. Yeah. So we cut to her in her apartment, and it's been like a month, and her eyes better.
I loved this. I thought it was great because they do show the passage of time through her face wound, which I realize is a weird thing to say.
Right.
But I like that. She's also like happy at home. Right. She's making dinner. She's like,
Trevor comes home late again.
Uh-huh. God, I hate
him. Has clearly been cheating on her 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. He was like, well, not food, so this is fine.
He's
like,
nice.
He's like, you know what I need to do before dinner is shower. Definitely got to shower first.
Oh, yeah. This is, I just fell on some lipstick. And so she gets back to the university and Bernadette gives her a hug and they're reuniting. And she's talking, and I really liked that they included this part in the movie too, which for 92 is kind of a big deal, because she's saying, like, this guy murdered two people, and the only reason they locked down this whole building and took it seriously as a crime is when a white woman got attacked.
Yeah.
Which is something we see in crime and the media right now. When it's a white person, they take it seriously, especially a white woman.
Yeah. There is the element of, and I know you've mentioned this before in a previous podcast, but the less dead, the people who are, you know, not made for TV, attractive and not white or whatever, like, or maybe like a sex worker gets murdered. It doesn't, like, cops don't care. Or
right.
There's that. I mean, I'm not saying cops don't care, but there is that sort of feeling out there.
Right.
It's not right. And I'm not saying that cops truly don't care, but like in movies, they typically don't care.
Serial killers pick those as victims because they know they won't be investigated the same way as like a person who's not like a homeless sex worker.
But she's giving her the photo negatives and she's saying, I got these pictures developed and there's interest from a publisher in our story now. So we are definitely going to bury Ben Franklin.
We're going to get published.
Yeah. Because my tragedy has made this a more valuable story.
You made the local section.
Yeah.
They would definitely do a podcast if it was now.
Oh, hell yeah, they would.
Right.
Oh, hell yeah, they would.
There's interest from Earwolf.
All I'm hearing is like the cereal music the cereal lady talking about Candyman.
We went in for an urban legend, but what we found was murder.
Yeah. Stay with us over the next 12 episodes where we discover who the Candyman really is.
So now she's walking by herself in the parking lot and she hears Helen. That doesn't sound like Tony Todd.
No, it doesn't.
She hears someone calling her name who has a very...
Helen. It's Helen. Less, it's like less raspy, but it's more... Like he's just using his deep voice.
Yeah.
He's talking like I could do
he's
it.
He's got a good
he
voice.
He does.
He does have an amazing voice. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with him a little bit.
Yeah.
But if
it's
you,
Tony fucking Todd, man.
And his casting, I think, is very, very good.
It is. I love Tony Todd so much because of this movie. And then later he's in Final Destination. He is amazing.
I don't really think he's done a lot of movies, or I haven't really seen him in anything.
He was in The Rock, too.
Oh, was he?
Another movie that I love.
He's great. And and honestly, like, I mean, he has a solid name.
Yeah.
And he's got a solid look.
The first part of his name's pretty good.
Well, the second part's really where it stands out. And I mean, he's just a great, great person and actor, I think. Great voice, great name, second name.
And
he's great.
I've heard he's really nice, too. Like, people that have run into him, I've heard he's like a real personable guy, you know? There's something about him that's so, like, endearing, and he's not bad to look at, that you just, like, it's hard not to feel sorry for him and, like him in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, he has a great, great look, a great, great last name. Like, he was
that
destined,
last name that really puts it over the top, right?
He was destined to be a star.
All right.
I said he hasn't been in much. I looked him up on IMDb. He's been in 220 things.
Oh, wow.
So I think I quit. I think I have to leave because that was a horrible understatement.
That was a hot take.
But he is confirmed for Candyman in the sequel.
Yes. So anyways, this is the first time we see him. We've heard his voice.
This is the pacing problem because we're like an hour into the movie.
Right. I'll say this. We've seen him before, but it's like for 1 second at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time you actually see him, something that's happening in reality, not told through a story.
Strap in, because this movie goes places very quickly.
Yeah.
It does. It goes some bonkers places, and that's kind of why I like this movie. So he's calling her name, and we see him standing at the edge of the parking garage, and he's got this coat on that's just amazing.
It's amazing.
Yes, and he's got his hands behind his back.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's actually talking. No, like, we don't see his mouth moving.
He's not. He's talking to her telepathically until he says, be my victim.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's saying he came for her and she...
I think Mikey and I have both been waiting for that since we heard him say that.
That's what he says, dude. You can't change it.
That's true. But he's saying, you doubted me And we're starting to cut with flashes of her in the apartment taking the pictures and seeing images of her.
And she is like entranced by him.
Yes.
Like can't walk, can't get away. All she can do is like lean against her car and be Phantom of the Opera, like taken by. It's very Phantom of the Opera.
Fun fact, he actually was going for making his own Phantom of the Opera type character.
Boom!
Yeah. Oh, nice. It's that Todd connection,
yes,
I think.
Listen, and guys, if I know anything about musicals, it's a lot. I know a lot about musicals, but he does feel like the Phantom from the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. And so he's saying that she wasn't content with the stories and she had basically she had to destroy his mythology. So now he was obliged to come and he wants her to be his victim.
Yeah, she is his Christine.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And he's saying, and I love what he's saying, is I'm the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom, and without these things, I'm nothing. So now I must shed innocent blood. So now I have to kill an innocent person to keep the people in this community afraid of me.
Yeah, because
look what you made me do.
Oh, he went all Taylor Swift on it.
So she wakes up and she's on the floor covered in blood and we hear screaming and we don't know what's happening yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so she wakes up and she's walking through and first she sees the Doberman. So I think we're starting to realize we're in Anne-Marie's apartment.
She sees the Doberman's head.
Yep, yes. She sees part of the Doberman and she realizes she's got a big meat cleaver in her hand.
I hate this so much.
I didn't hate it. It was definitely probably the best shot scene, and I think it captures what the movie was going for the best, because you wake up, you feel her confusion, she checks to see if she's almost dead, there's blood everywhere, she
it's finds not
a
her
dog's
blood.
Head she picks up the knife from the ground, she doesn't wake up with one because she's afraid. She wanders out in the hall and she hears Anna Marie yelling and scared. So she tries to go protect Anna Marie.
Over a bloody crib.
Yeah.
Like, there's blood all over this crib.
I thought the baby was actually dead in the crib. They just didn't show us that.
And then Anna Marie turns around and attacks her.
Yeah.
And then she ends up cleaving Anna Marie in the arm and self-defense. And then the cops come in and arrest her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and when the cops come in, she's holding the meat cleaver like, stop hitting me, stop hitting me. But she's holding it up and looks aggressive. And when the cops come in, they're like, oh, my God. She's about to kill this woman, so they do arrest her.
Right.
Movies do this, like, I'm confused whether I'm the killer or not, like, trope.
And so there's a reading of this that Candyman isn't real and that she is the one who murders them. That's not the reading that I take.
I don't take that reading, but it's a cool
thing. And I think you could see it that way. And I think because, like you said, they do a really good job of showing that and showing the unfairness of being outside of the law again, you know? Like, they treat her like shit for the rest of the movie. So, yes, the police bust in with her, like, catching her red-handed, basically. And so she gets arrested and dragged out.
I mean, in all fairness, even if she didn't kill the dog, take the baby, or anything, she still did attack Anne Marie with the
kid. Okay, Anne-Marie's arm splurted blood everywhere.
Yeah. It did. Yeah.
So she did assault at very least.
She did. Yeah. And they just want to get her out. But anyways.
Yeah.
So now we have the strip search scene. And this is one of the scenes that I remember from the first movie, but it was so much harder to watch this time because you can feel how upset she is in that scene.
And confused.
Yeah. And like, this is none, I didn't do anything wrong. Why are you treating me like this? Because for all she knows, she didn't, you know, and she was attacked.
I mean, she looks very guilty.
Yeah. She does. Exactly. Oh yeah. If I were the police, there's no way I would question.
I mean, you literally wrap it up, boys. Yeah, right. We got it.
If we hadn't seen it from her perspective, we would probably think that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this scene is just so, she does such an amazing job in the scene because you can just tell how upset and scared she is. And fun fact about this scene, the director let her choose what actor would be the policeman doing the scene with her. And, so that she would be comfortable. And she chose her best friend. So
no
that,
shit.
Mm-hmm, that actress awesome. There is her best friend.
Yeah.
There is no like sexual nudity in this movie.
There's not.
But there is nudity. Like, she does get naked in this scene, but it's not usable nudity.
Would you say there's really no male gaze in this scene? There's just a little bit at the end.
There's a little at the end.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's notable too, because she is nude and she's nude covered with, like, she's wet and naked, you know? So this could easily in the hands of another director be a very, yes, exactly. But in the hands of another director, this could be a very exploitative scene. And I think this is an example of the female gaze, because you're looking at her as a human being rather than a sexual object. And we see that in the bathtub scene later too.
This is not it's not a very sexual scene even when she's in the bathtub.
Exactly, because we're on her side and we're thinking, hey, she's a human being, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so she does get a shower though, and now she is under her arrest.
She's actually not under her arrest, as you said. She has not even been charged
yet. Well, but they say she's under
they say they read her rights. She's
under
arrest.
I know, but then at the next scene, it's like, you haven't even been charged. They want to find the baby so they have evidence against you.
Exactly. Because they want to charge you for murder. Well,
no, right. I don't get that at all. Like, she should have never left jail.
I know. I get that. And I understand a lot of people or a lot of police, they do want to find the body because the body will give you physical evidence. Tie you to the killer. Like, that makes sense to me. That chain of events. But you've already arrested her.
They would at least interrogate her.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and so we see the same detective who was her friend earlier and being kind to her, just looking at her like she's garbage.
I would argue that he's being kind to her in this scene.
Oh, I think so, too.
Because he is reading her rights. He literally at some point is saying, like, you have the right to remain silent. And he said in a tone of, like, shut the fuck up and ask for a lawyer.
Yeah.
Which I think is the nicest thing. A police officer whose goal is really just to find out what actually happened.
To find out where the baby you probably murdered is.
Right. And I feel like he's like, you need a lawyer, get a lawyer.
Right,
and then
he
does let her go make a call. And then she foolishly calls her house to get her husband, but she should know by now that her husband's not going to be home. No.
Right.
And it even shows, I don't know if you remember this, but when the phone call comes in, it zooms over the bed. So you see the entire bed and it's empty.
And it's made. Yeah.
And it zooms in on the phone. And of course, later he's like, I was fast asleep in bed because he's a fucking liar.
No, you weren't, Trevor.
Guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate him so much.
Trevor's the worst.
So Trevor finally gets there to pick her up because she's in jail and she's like watching a toilet flush and she's having flashbacks of like Amory crying and she's hearing the baby.
Yeah. And then Trevor finally goes and washes the Stacy off of him and then goes and gets her out of jail and takes her home.
Right.
And that's when they have a lawyer because he's the one who's guiding them through like the reporters.
Right. And there's tons of press outside.
Yeah.
And because a baby is missing.
Yeah. I mean, I'd imagine there would be a lot of press any city that happened in.
Right. But we're hearing this crying and we're hearing the crying coming from Candyman's lair. So I think it's telling us the baby's not dead.
No. And the baby's with Candyman.
Exactly. Right.
Because the Candyman would have had a baby.
So she's saying that she blacked out and she doesn't remember any of this. And asking Trevor if he believes her, which
he's like, of course, Winky Blinky.
Right.
Of course you didn't kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I fucking hate Trevor.
Yeah,
man.
He's the worst.
He's the worst.
She looks pretty guilty.
She does
look guilty. I will admit that she does look incredibly guilty, but I hate Trevor because he's cheating on her, not because he thinks his wife might have killed somebody.
Right.
I
get that completely.
Yeah. And he was trying to screw over her research, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he just doesn't value her. Like, she's, like, not necessarily a trophy, but
he's not thoughtful at all when it comes to her.
Exactly. So she's taking a bath, and Trevor says he's got to go to the university. He doesn't want to leave her alone, but he needs to go get something for, like, 20
minutes.
He needs to have
go
real
get
quickie.
Some, not something.
He's got to grade some D's in his office.
Ugh, yeah. He's got to give Stacy that D.
Yeah. So she is getting out of the bath and she remembers, oh, my photos and oh, my projector.
Yeah.
And so she gets her projector out and Todd was afraid because he's seen It Chapter 1.
Yes.
The Candyman was going to come out of the projector.
That
and
was
get
the
him.
Scariest moment in It Chapter 1 for
me.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. And so she's looking at all these pictures and she notices a picture of her in the taking a picture in the mirror of the medicine cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And she's noticing something is amiss in this picture.
Something's in the background.
Yeah. And then she hits the enhance button on her projector.
Yeah.
Which
is like
exist.
Turning it off.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it brings the Candyman into focus.
Right. Yeah. And she's already seen him in the garage. So she knows who it is.
Yeah. She's like, ooh, I recognize that baller ass fur coat.
Yeah. And so she's pondering that and she hears a spooky noise. And so she goes into the bathroom and the light is still on. And we see the same shot as we saw when they say Candyman 5 times in the mirror.
Oh my God. This is the most scary moment for me. I hated this so, so much.
She's looking in the mirror and he just punches through with his hook hand and starts trying to get
it. Hook hand opens the cabin. Says,
man, it got me because I was expecting her to close the mirror and then you see him behind her.
Right.
But
in the hallway. Yeah.
It doesn't do that. It just bashes through the open medicine cabinet. It's so scary. Oh,
right.
It was pretty good. I like this moment.
Yeah, I do. And so, because then she runs out into the hallway and he's there in the hallway. And then she runs back into her house and she's about to call someone. And I don't know if the phone doesn't work or whatever, but he's right behind her in her apartment now, too.
Oh, then he hypnotizes her before she calls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's
that's
like,
right.
He's like, Helen, don't you want to be my victim?
Yeah. And he says, I have the child. Let me take him to you or you will die in his place.
Yeah.
Come to me and be immortal. And so now, while they're having this heartfelt talk, Bernadette shows up.
With flowers, which is what you get your friend.
She's so sweet. Bernadette's
she
the
is.
Best, man. She's
Bernadette.
A great, great friend.
She really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not a friend for very long.
Yeah, she's about to be Bernadette, but still, she's a great, great friend.
So Helen is hypnotized and trying to warn Bernadette, but she can't speak loudly.
Like,
and I think at some point, Bernadette hears her and tries to go in and help.
She does, and the door's unlocked. She does go
in. No one locks an apartment door this whole movie. It's so frustrating.
Lock your doors, people.
It was the 90s.
So Bernadette comes in and the door slams behind her, and she sees Candyman, and he kills her.
Yes.
And then we see Helen laying on the floor and she's kind of like waking up a little bit. And then we see
bleeding because Candyman stabbed her in the back of the neck with his hook.
That's right.
Maybe not deep, but like it drew blood.
Yeah, enough to make her bloody. Yeah.
Yeah. So Trevor comes home.
I thought for a minute it was going to be Candyman. But it's not. It's Trevor. And he's like, what the fuck? Did you kill Bernadette?
I thought for a minute it was going to reveal that Trevor was Candyman.
Ooh.
Ooh, that would have been cool.
I mean, he is terrible.
I
like Candyman better than Trevor.
I do too. Yeah. I'm honestly glad she ends up with the Candyman and not Trevor. Yeah.
Well, she chooses herself. Okay. And she's got this big butcher knife in her hand now, or like right next to her.
There's blood everywhere and Bernadette's dead.
Yeah.
And like,
same scene.
Although there's no blood on the knife. So there's no way that knife was the murder weapon. But I'm just saying.
Well, he still called 911.
Look, this was before Forensic Files.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so then she wakes up and she's handcuffed on her bed and they're like injecting her with something. And they pull her out and she passes Bernadette and she's on the floor and her face is all blue and she's been cut
open.
Yeah,
she's dead. She's like cut it.
Oh, yeah, she's got, and there's the slides are all over her body.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah, they were.
That.
Mm-hmm. And Trevor's on the couch like, oh my God, I just went to cheat on her for 20 minutes.
I know.
And I come back and Bernadette is here and my wife killed her.
Yeah, but now I got my out.
Yeah, I mean, he does have his out.
Oh, yeah, because you can see it on his smug face, because he's even smug in this scene. He's like, I'm glad I'm cheating on her.
I'm gonna stand.
I hate Trevor so much.
He's the worst. Yeah. So while she's being driven to the police station, she's seeing like flashbacks. She's hearing his voiceover now, and he's saying he's a rumor, and it's great to live in other people's dreams because you can live forever, but you don't actually have to be. And so he's creating this legend, and he's just trying to convince her that it's better to be with him.
This is where the Phantom of the Opera is trying to convince Christine to stay with him in his lair.
Right.
And he will teach her music of the night.
They wheel her to a psych ward.
Which is where she belongs.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, she's in 4-point restraints because she just murdered like 3 people. I mean, like, it
looks allegedly.
I mean, it looks pretty bad.
Well, and so they put her in these restraints and then they just wheel her into this room and leave her by herself.
She's not by herself.
Because Candyman's there.
Yeah, Candyman's there. Yeah. It's fine.
Floats above her.
Yeah. Like in the first Mission Impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
He like comes down like Ethan Hunt. Like,
hi, it's Candyman. Yeah. Can I? And then this is when it gets weird because he's like, can I just kiss you now?
Yeah. This is a very Phantom of the Opera moment, too.
Okay.
Because it plays a lot on those themes, like, except in the Phantom of the Opera, the Trevor character is actually in love with Christine, and and is not just trying to like bang all the young dancers that are there. He actually is in love with Christine,
right?
Unlike Trevor in this movie. But anyway, so he's there trying to convince Helen to come with him to the lair, right?
Save the baby. Yeah.
And then the other people kind of come in and she's like, you're the murderer. And then people come in and she's like, he's under the bed. He's under the bed and there's nobody there.
The bed. She's like, he's under the bed.
Yeah.
And they're like, she's crazy.
Yeah.
That's why you're in a psych
ward. Honestly, if I walked in on that, it's just a lady going crazy, which we see the video footage of it later.
Yeah.
You're just insane. I'm sorry to say it.
So now she's waking up restrained again and she's still in the psych ward, but she's got different clothes on. And so there's an asshole orderly pushing her in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
To her psychiatrist's office, Dr. Burke. She says, I want to talk to my husband. Have I been committed? And this is when he tells her,
your husband's obviously cheating. You're making really bad decisions.
Exactly. And you've been here for a month. And
he
we've been
say that, but yeah.
And you've been here for a month and we've been giving you Thorazine. And that's when she's like, I want to fucking talk to my lawyer, dude.
Right. He brings out her commitment papers and like, you're court ordered to be here. And then it's like, you know, we're tapering down the medication because we're worried about you. I'm on your defense's side because we think you can't stand trial.
Yeah, we're trying to assess.
I work for your defense. I work for your lawyer.
She's like, no, this is all real, blah, 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 blah.
I can call him.
Yep. Yeah. And conveniently, there's a mirror.
Well, he shows
in
her the
office.
Video of his first night. And you don't see Candyman floating above him. She's like, that's impossible.
And to add insult to injury, he shows her 4 different screens of the same thing.
Yeah.
Here's where you're crazy. Here's where you're crazy. Here's where you're crazy. Here's where you're crazy.
Wait, the Oprah of crazy? Anyway, so she like leans back and says, oh, I can call him. Let me look in this mirror that's conveniently placed here. And she says, Candyman, 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 Candyman. And then he doesn't show up.
Yeah. And she's like,
and then you hear. Yeah, it's very phallic and sexual. And then you see the
blood
the doctor die. Yeah.
Yeah, and Candyman right behind him, like ripping his body up. It's very brutal.
How does she get out of the restraints?
He cuts her out.
Oh, yeah. Candyman cuts her
because
out.
Because I was thinking this is the best thing that could happen to her because if she's in restraints, there's no way she could have killed him.
Right.
So she could be like, there is something happening. But he's like, no, no, no.
Right.
You did this. You either have to die or come with me.
Mm-hmm. And then he backwards flies out the window.
That was so cool.
I know.
I love cool. that. No, how no. do they do that?
I don't know. Pulleys?
Yep.
Yeah, a simple machine.
Movie magic. Yeah. So she climbs out on the ledge to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And then she like knocks on the patient next door's window. And the nurse is like, oh, person on the ledge, come on in. And yeah. she slams her head into the ground yeah, repeatedly. Dude.
May have killed her.
It's just once. It's just once. She just mm-hmm. jumps on her and her head knocks her out.
I don't think she killed her. She's
I think
not
it just knocked her out. And then it got real sexual real quick
yeah, mm-hmm.
as she strips him down. Yeah.
And there's a patient just leering the whole time.
Well, he's like restrained down too, but if he wasn't, it looked like he'd be doing something very inappropriate.
Oh, yeah. Mentally composing his penthouse letter.
Oh, yeah. I think Mikey even
Mikey
said,
did. I saw
dear
that
penthouse, never expected this to happen to me.
All right.
She changes into the orderly's clothes.
Right.
And then goes to the elevator with the orderly's keys and escapes the asylum.
Yes.
And then she's like, I gotta get home.
Yeah, which is where I would go. She heads home and she's saying, please be home, Trevor. Please don't be cheating, Trevor. Please don't be cheating. She doesn't say that, but she says it in her heart.
Please don't already be moving in my replacement who you've been cheating on me with for probably a year.
Hmm. Unfortunately, that is exactly what happens.
You know, as someone who's been through something very similar to this, it sucks.
Yikes.
But I just moved.
Well, anyway, Helen gets home. She opens the door because it's not locked because it's never locked.
Right.
And then there's
it's
pink.
It's even open. It's like wide open.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
She just pushes the door open.
It's for the paint fumes.
That's not even breaking and entering. It's just entering.
It's just entering.
And it's her home.
And there's like, it's half painted Pepto-Bismol pink.
Yes.
It's
so disgusting bad. Early 90s
it
style.
It is so bad. Yeah.
And she's like,
what
Trevor,
are you doing in my house?
Trevor. And then like, what's her face? Stacy looks horrified because of the murder just escaped the psych ward.
Well, yeah. And she's still.
And she's busted.
Yeah. She's busted banging the murderer's husband.
I think she's less scared about being busted and more scared about being knifed to death.
Yeah. Yes. I would be too. If you're sleeping with a murderer's husband and that murderer shows up, who do you think's about to get murdered?
Exactly.
Everyone.
Yeah.
And so now Trevor's there and she's asking him, and I love when she says, what's wrong? Are you scared of something? Because I think she's starting to like feel what it's like how much power it gives you when people are afraid of you.
Yeah. And Trevor's like straight out of the shower. Like no shoes, shower robe, towel around his neck, just pops out and is like, what's going on? Oh my God.
Are you not done painting the kitchen yet while I shower?
Right. Pink?
When's dinner?
Right. I thought we decided on wood paneling.
He's the worst. I can't find, I can't wait until next year while I replace you.
Exactly.
Stacy.
I mean, yeah, Stacy, if he'll cheat on her, he'll cheat on you.
Anyway.
So they're both terrified of her, and she even hands the Stacy the phone and tries to get her to call the police, and she's too afraid.
Well, they leave the phone off the hook, and you hear that beep 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 like for the rest of the scene, and then up to the point where it's like, if you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. And I'm like, what is that? Why is that even the thing?
So Helen's like, Trevor, why'd you bring this woman into our house?
Mm-hmm.
And these paint colors are terrible. So she picks up a bucket of paint, throws it against the wall.
Oh, I love that
part. She Mikey's out.
Yeah, I was like, that's right, girl. This paint is terrible.
Yeah.
So once she says, it's over, and he says, don't kill me.
Yeah.
she breaks up with him, and he's like, I thought you were going to be in prison for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but I broke up with you 3 weeks before this movie started.
Right.
Yeah.
I just haven't told you yet. But I think she's acknowledging it to herself, and I don't think she's just saying the relationship is over. I think she's kind of saying, like, my life is over. I've got nothing left. And she says that to him, like, you were all I had left.
Yeah, but Trevor is like, I mean, he's not seeing it through that lens because everything is about Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, yes, we are over.
Right.
I've been with Stacy for a year.
Now she's standing on a bridge shivering in the cold, and it's Randolph Street.
Yeah.
A street named after Mikey.
Yeah.
She
stares into the water, and Cayman's like, don't you want to come to me yet?
Yeah.
Because you got nothing left.
Yeah. They will all abandon you, which they do.
Which is like my strategy.
Aww.
I get it. Mikey has a very, very specific technique.
Don't you want to go out with me? You don't really have anything left.
It'll be the greatest 3 weeks of your life.
Don't you hate internet dating? Why don't you stop that for 3 or 4 weeks?
So it's nighttime at Cabrini Green.
Yep.
So she's going to meet Candyman now to try to save the baby. Also, well, where the fuck else
I'm
is she
gonna tell
go?
You, she does not seem motivated by the baby.
I think she is.
She turns down Candyman multiple times. That's why these other people got killed. She could have just been like, well, I've got to do this for the baby.
But she doesn't have another opportunity. After Bernadette's killed, she's in an institution.
Yeah,
and
I think
she goes home.
I think her first desire was to go to Trevor.
Yeah.
And then it was to save the baby.
Right.
And she does all of that immediately, pretty much in that order.
So she's walking in, she's going through the medicine cabinet again. And then we see another, she like climbs up a stack of boxes after getting a hook that's conveniently just hanging on a chain. I guess it's Candyman's like Sunday hook or something. And so she climbs up into like an attic layer or something. And we see daylight there. And he is laying asleep on a giant slab of stone.
It's
a
little weird.
I don't think so.
Or is he pretending to be asleep because he wants to catch her doing whatever she does, which is pick up a hook and stab him with the hook.
Which is what she tries to do, and his eyes open right before. And
no, she does hit him with the hook.
I mean, yeah she
he
does.
He wakes up, and he takes it out of his shoulder, and he's like, oh, Helen.
Yeah, I've been dead since 1890s. Right. You can't deader me.
Right.
Yeah.
But before she sees him on the slab, she's seen all of these illustrations of him as a
it's
real
person.
It's the
Betsy stuff that he's done on the wall.
Exactly. Yeah. And like a scene of his death also.
Yes. Yeah. His lynching, more or less.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so then she's come and they had a deal. And so she's fulfilling her part of the deal and they start spin dancing. She's saying they have a bargain, but she's afraid. And he asks, what are you afraid of? The pain or what comes after? And the pain will be exquisite, which is a very Clive Barker thing. But after, there's nothing to fear and you'll live forever as this immortal legend.
And she does.
Yeah. He lays her down on another like stone table or something and starts to get real hook handsy.
He slides that hook up her dress.
Yeah, and I don't like that.
It was real weird.
And so for one of the things you can say about this movie is there is an interracial relationship in it, which was not a very common thing to happen at the time. But there's a very like predator black boogeyman kind of element to this. Like he is very... like he's asking her to be his victim, not like be my partner, you know?
I don't think they ever say the name of the woman he actually fell in love with when he was alive.
Right.
But I feel like he's looking to have that sort of relationship with Helen.
Well, I think so too.
I don't think he means I want to victimize you, unless you mean by hook bang her in this scene.
Right.
Because he's very gentle with her. He's very like kind to her. I mean, I know he kills everyone around her, but I mean like the way he treats her is actually very, he takes care of her. That's why it's very Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
He's this horrible, horrible person, but really is in love with, I almost called her Christine again, with Helen.
And I think you're right. I think he does really care about her and has fallen in love with her and wants to like reclaim this family that he lost.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is the way he approaches her and the way he talks to her is very manipulative and threatening. And he's like basically threatening to murder someone if she won't come with him.
Yeah, it's very Phantom of the Opera.
Right. And that's the complicated nature of this, because there are elements that I could see as like empowering and sweet, and then elements that are real problematic if you look at it now. And Robin R. Means Coleman wrote Horror Noir, which is a book about black representation in the horror genre.
Right.
And she's compared the imagery here to The Birth of a Nation, which I haven't seen The Birth of a Nation, but I mean, I trust her judgment.
I've only heard about it, but
it's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's an element of exploitative and problematic element of this too. And that's what I'm saying. This movie, man, there's just so many layers and levels to it, and not all of them are good.
Good. Yeah.
Here's where the bees come. So he opens his coat and he begasms all over.
He opens his coat like a predator on a playground.
Yes.
Yeah. And bees just go all over him. Oh, and he opens his mouth and bees start coming out of his mouth.
Yep.
Oh.
So he opens his mouth and there's bees crawling out of it. And then he bee kisses her.
Oh, yeah.
Right on the mouth. And it's gross.
She's like, oh, bee, hey.
Well, and I kept saying he's asking her to be immortal.
Yeah. And he is. Yeah. I don't understand the bees. It's whatever.
It's because he died from getting bees.
I understand that part of it. I just don't understand why they need to be here in their beegasms.
Why do they need to be here?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. But
how
listen,
many times do we say the word bee?
Can we? How many bee puns can we work into this movie?
I don't know. It really just stung me the wrong way.
All right, I'm going to be the queen and order us to buzz on. Okay. Ugh. And so they pick up the baby and he says it's time for a new miracle. And then she wakes up and she's still got the hook, but he's gone. And this is when she sees like the big kind of shrine thing on the wall. And it says, it was always you, Helen. And she looks just like the woman that he fell in love with that impregnated her. I think it's the eyes, because she does have very big, like distinguishing
green
eyes.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
And it doesn't look exactly like her, which I actually kind of like, because it's not like a reincarnation. I don't think they're saying she was reincarnated as her. I think it's just like,
yeah, I didn't get that vibe either.
So now she's hearing the baby crying and she's crawling onto the bonfire, and we hear Jake wake up and he decides it's time to go light the bonfire.
Yeah, because apparently that's a 7-year-old's decision.
look, when Candyman was arrested, it created a vacuum in this community. Yeah. And who's going to step into that vacuum but Jake?
It logically makes sense. It's like the Dalai Lama. So like when the Dalai Lama, when the leader of the gang gets arrested, they need to find a new leader of the gang.
Yeah. And have you seen how cute that kid is?
He's adorable.
Like,
man,
he commands with his presence.
So she's so it's like a big pile of old furniture and wood and stuff. So she's climbing on it. The baby's
with
crying
the hook.
Inside. Yeah, she's got the hook. She's using the hook to climb.
And then she drops the hook and it falls all the way down to the bottom. Yeah. And then she climbs down to the bottom.
Yeah, she climbs into it.
Yeah.
It's like hollow.
And that's where the baby is.
And that's where the baby
is. Yes, yeah. And so she picks up the baby. But surprise, Candyman's right behind her. And as they're throwing gasoline on the fire, Jake says, takes a Todd quote and says, burn him! Yep. And lights the bonfire. And so she's screaming.
So she's trying to scream, but he's holding her.
Exactly. And Candyman won't let her go.
He only lets her go when the rest of the like community comes out and starts yelling, burn it, burn it, burn it.
Right.
And then he lets her go because he knows no matter how loud she screams, they're not going to hear her because they're all screaming about the bonfire.
Exactly. Right. And she's yelling that he lied to her. He said that if she sacrificed herself, he would let the baby go. But I think he wanted her and the baby to, like what we said earlier, to recreate this family that they
absolutely
lost. She finally stabs him with a flaming pile of wood, a flaming stake or something, and gets away. And so she's crawling out. The bonfire is starting to fall on top of them. And a giant burning log falls on her back and she starts to burn.
Yeah, she's on fire. Yeah, she's crawling out. She definitely looks like Anakin Skywalker coming out of that bonfire.
Oh, yeah. Listen, that little seven-year-old definitely had the high ground.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So she crawls out with the baby, gives the baby to Anne Marie, and then they put her out. So,
they
do. The community
puts her out, and then they're like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, like she's deadzo.
Yeah, we got to go. She looks not good.
So the next thing we see is her with her like hair burned off in a coffin.
Yeah, dead.
Mm-hmm. And the passive aggressive funeral that Stacy was allowed to attend.
The only people at this funeral are her ex-husband with his new girlfriend and Benjamin Franklin.
I understand why your ex-husband would be there. I can understand him feeling very, very guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. He's a horrible dude. Fuck him.
Right.
And Benjamin Franklin, a work colleague, that makes sense. But why bring the woman you were cheating on the dead woman with to the funeral?
Uh-huh.
And if you were that woman, would you even want to go? Like, why?
What, why would you go? Also, they still think she murdered like five people.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, they lower the casket down and it goes all the way down to the bottom. You guys have seen funerals before. Sorry about that. And then you see the whole
Cabrini Green
community walk over and then they throw the hook they found, which is Candyman's hook.
It is. It's not the one that she had been using. Yeah, it's his actual hook.
It's the one that you saw because you can see the nail sticking out.
Yeah. And they're in this long procession honoring her at her funeral.
Yeah.
Because they actually believe this legend. And they know, for whatever you believe, that Candyman is real. And she saved them from this.
Back to the Pepto-Bismol apartment.
Yep. Trevor is in the bathroom.
He is sitting on the toilet feeling guilty for the first time.
He's sitting on the toilet, pants up.
Yeah.
So he's just like in there to get away from Stacy.
Yes.
He's just like, oh my God, when does next semester start?
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst.
I thought you were going home for Christmas
break. No, I don't want to meet your parents.
And I want to say he's kind of regretting his life choices. I don't think he's going that far. I think he's regretting
some stuff.
A little bit.
He's crying in the bathroom.
I mean, it's
I don't feel any guilt or sympathy for him at all.
And none should be given. It's like, I don't know, a month after, you know, you cheated on your significant other and like you feel horrible because, you know, you blew up the life that actually was pretty good because you were just generally unhappy. So you destroyed what you thought was causing you to be unhappy, but you're still unhappy. So you're realizing slowly that it's really just you that is unhappy and that you actually just burnt down something that actually brought you a great bit of joy and happiness because you thought they were the problem. But now you're realizing that you're the problem and you are just repeating the cycle with someone new.
Yep.
I'm not projecting anything.
No, not
I'm
at all.
Saying that that's exactly
welcome
what
to my world.
Exactly.
No, but I think you're exactly right. And before we talk about what happens to him, let's talk about Stacy for a minute.
So this scene would work really well
if she had a bra.
If Stacy had a bra.
Yeah. And I think part of that might be to code her as like a loose woman, you know, and to make her us dislike
her. Because it was loose.
It was cutting back between the kitchen where he's like, go make dinner, Stacy. And she's angrily making dinner.
Yeah.
And him crying in the bathroom. But there's no bra on. The shirt is see-through. All you can see is her boobs.
It's
and like,
very
you don't notice anything else, like her angrily cutting the meat.
I noticed that. I noticed her angrily cutting
the meat. All I noticed was nipples.
And the that's part of my point is like, we don't need her to not be wearing a bra for us to her. But anyways, she can't understand why he's upset because he just buried his wife that day. And why won't he just come be happy and help her make dinner? So she's like, first of all, opening a fridge that has nothing but beer in it and these steaks that she grabs out. And then she's like aggressively throwing them on the counter and just being
a 20-year-old,
an immature
kid. Angsty 20-year-old.
And hey, listeners, if you're 20, I'm sure you're wonderful. This girl is not. I think she just doesn't have enough perspective to be able to
see.
She
doesn't, but this is Trevor's fault because he shouldn't have moved her in.
Totally.
After your
I honestly think she's a victim in this situation, even though she's not necessarily coded that way. She is just Trevor's next victim. I feel bad for her.
So he's looking real sad and just trying to get Stacy to leave him alone.
Yeah.
And he's like moaning her name and he stands up and looks in the mirror and he's saying, Helen, Helen. And he ends up saying it. Five times, and then turns the light off, and then she's behind him wearing all white with like her funeral attire.
I always go into a girl's bathroom and say her name five times just to help me memorize it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you turn the light off again?
No, I keep it on.
Well, but if it's a girl that you're with right now, shouldn't it be your last girlfriend that you say her name five times?
No, he's just going in there to make sure he doesn't say his last girlfriend's name in front of the new girlfriend.
There we go.
Helen. Oh, hello, Helen. How was your day?
Nice. And then the nurse pops up behind you and guts you.
Yeah. And that's what happens here because Helen does pop up behind him and gut him.
Yeah, with Candyman's hook that she's holding.
Yeah, and Stacy hears all this and she runs to the bathroom, opens the door, and sees Trevor gutted in the tub.
And before she kills him, she says, what's the matter? Are you afraid of something?
Yeah.
Love it. And then we start to see the credits roll, but as we do, we see this stone pillar that Candyman was laying on. But now behind it, there's a painting of her and her hair's on fire. And she's kind of like ascending and there's a big crack in the middle of it.
It's the apotheosis of Helen.
It is. Yeah. And that's the movie.
And that's the movie.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about it?
I love it.
Yeah.
I like it better after we talked about it.
Yeah.
I
convinced you.
I don't know about that. I don't know, man. It's hard to talk about just because of some of the racial components of it. So like, I'm sure we didn't do it justice and I apologize.
And we want to hear your perspective. If you disagree with us or if we got something wrong, please let us know.
I didn't hate it. There were some jump scares that I hated. I honestly didn't think they were going to kill Trevor. I thought he was going to get away with what he was doing and that was going to piss me off. So I was very glad he died. That's how I feel about it. I didn't hate it. Didn't love it. I think everyone should watch it.
I see why Jen loves it. I think this is like Jen's house too.
Oh yeah.
Like I can appreciate it.
This and Event Horizon are like my wheelhouse.
Is Event Horizon Clive Barker too?
Yeah.
It feels like it.
Clive Barker inspired. I'm not exactly sure.
So through Jen's lens, I can see why she loves it.
Yes.
But I don't love it. I probably won't watch it again. But I'm looking forward to the remake or like the new one.
Sure, yeah.
Me too. And I've got some fun facts about that. Mm-hmm. I love it. It was not nearly as scary for me this time.
I did not think it was as scary at all.
But I saw so much more in it. And I think there's a lot to dissect in this movie. And that's the kind of movie I love that I could probably write like 3 or 4 blogs about this. We were kind of talking about this a little bit, but what I see in Helen, and I think this was one of the first times I'd actually seen a female character like this. Like I see what happens when the patriarchy turns against you and you're no longer helpful to that structure and they cast you out. And I think that if you look at it as, like I said earlier, a white woman's cautionary tale, this is showing them, hey, don't treat other people like this, because if you're building up this system, you might be a victim of it too.
Yeah, you're supporting a system that will turn on you.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of problematic elements in this, but I think one of the things that could be good about it is that it would allow white people to kind of empathize with someone who's getting treated unfairly in the criminal justice system or has been cast out of society.
Sure. Yeah.
I think it humanizes a lot of people that a lot of horror audiences may not have seen before.
You mean like Anne Marie?
Yeah. And I think you should watch Horror Noir. There's a documentary on Shudder and you should read that book because they're both just amazing. But Jordan Peele has talked about how this was like an African-American character who had power and who was it was a very empowering thing for them to watch him. You know, I don't want to speak for that community, but this is what I've heard him talk about. And so I really like that aspect of it.
So let's talk box office.
All right.
So what do you think the budget was for this movie?
$10 million.
Okay.
Eight.
Yeah, it was 8 to 9. So did you know?
No.
I don't have an exact number, but it's 8 to 9. It made $25 million domestically, which is, I think, really good for early 90s, like 92. Yeah. That's much more now. Yeah. And it was rated R, and rated R horror does not typically do as good as, you know, PG-13 or whatever. When it came out, it was fourth in the box office. It got beat by Under Siege, Last of the Mohicans, The Mighty Ducks.
Flying V!
Right. And it beat Mr. Baseball and Sneakers, which are two movies that I love. And 1492, The Conquest of Paradise, which shows you how terrible Columbus actually was.
Exactly.
It doesn't get into all the stuff Columbus did, but it does show you that he wasn't a great dude.
Oh, yeah.
It did pretty good. I mean, obviously enough to get two sequels, you said?
Yeah, two sequels.
And they're remaking it now. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is a beloved movie in the horror community.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's box office. Jen, do you have any fun facts
for us? Oh, I've got some of my favorite ever fun facts.
Nice.
This was adapted from the novella The Forbidden by Clive Barker, and that's in the book In the Flesh, and we talked about that at the beginning. But it was actually set in Liverpool, which was his hometown, and it was inspired by the Guy Fawkes story.
Yeah.
And that's where the kind of the bonfire thing comes in. And so when they decided to set it in America, they made a lot of the changes. The character of Bernadette was actually, Virginia Madsen was originally going to play Bernadette instead of the actress who plays her. And I think it helps that they cast an African-American actress in that role.
Because
the person who was going to play the lead ended up getting pregnant, and that's when Virginia Madsen took over the role. But if Virginia Madsen couldn't do it, it was maybe going to be Sandra Bullock. That was someone they were talking about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and this was before Speed, so she would have been kind of an unknown actress.
Yeah, but she's great.
Virginia Madsen was great in this movie.
Agreed. I think she did great.
So part of the inspiration for the rewrites of this movie was the murder of Ruthie Mae McCoy.
Ruthie.
Yep, Ruthie
Jean. Just like
Jean.
The Ruthie in the, yeah.
Exactly. She did not live in Cabrini Green, but she lived in the Chicago Abbott Homes, which was another housing development in Chicago. And she was murdered by someone who came in through the walls of her bathroom.
What?
So, yeah.
Creepy.
Yeah, very much like inspired this movie.
Yeah.
But so this apparently divided the African-American community, and about half of them thought that it was like racist, and the other half were glad to have so much representation in the movie. And Virginia Madsen apparently heard two people arguing about it in front of her, two African-American women.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When they were writing it, they actually had meetings with some people from the NAACP to make sure they were treating it respectfully. Mm. Yeah.
Really?
They actually filmed this at Cabrini Green.
Did they? Oh, really?
They did.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
They apparently had to negotiate with some of the gang leaders to let them be extras in the movie.
Wow.
So some of those people that you see, like some of the people in the bathroom, I bet those were probably real gang members in Cabrini Green.
Wow.
Because they made these deals for the safety of their crew. And the actress who plays Bernadette talked about how they would hear on the news how like dangerous and scary it was there. And I'm not saying it's not, but she said when they got there, they saw all these like families and children and just people that were trying to make their lives better.
Yeah. More the Anne Marie character.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 A lot more of the Anne Marie character than the characters who are like heckling them at the beginning. Yeah. And I think it's great that this movie shows us both of those things.
But the Anne Marie character doesn't make the news. So the public perception of these places is very much like the kids with the boombox down, you know, harassing people stuff.
Right. Tony Todd, and we've already talked about how much we love him in this movie. They originally were going to cast Eddie Murphy in this role.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Apparently he was too expensive.
I bet.
Good.
And I am so glad. But not only because I love Tony Todd, but just the wrong personality.
Absolutely
for
wrong.
This role.
Eddie Murphy's like 5'8". He could not be the Phantom of the Opera.
Right.
Anyway, and Tony Todd's amazing. He has a much better voice than Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
Eddie Murphy's great. Like, I love Eddie Murphy. He's hilarious. And in the early 90s, he was like the biggest of biggest movie stars at this point. But yeah, I'm glad he didn't get it.
I am too. So they used real bees in this movie. What? All of the bees you see are real, except when they're like flying over. Although you said those were real bees too,
they
right?
They look like them, yeah.
Yeah, so they're all real bees. And Virginia Madsen's actually allergic to bees.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no. So the bees that were on her were specifically bred for this movie, and they had to be 12 hours old. Because they would be old enough to look like full-grown bees.
But not have stingers?
Exactly. Yeah. Their stingers were too soft to really do any damage. But so Tony Todd, the bees they used on him were just regular real bees.
I bet he got stung so much.
Fun fact about that. But first, he had to wear like a mouth guard when they're actually in his mouth.
I was wondering about that because he has like a shitload of bees in his mouth.
Yeah, but he had like a guard so they didn't go down his throat.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Doesn't it just make you love Tony Todd more?
He's amazing.
So Tony Todd negotiated in his contract $1,000 for every time he got stung.
Oh, I bet he made a lot of money off that.
He got stung 23 times.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome? I know. Doesn't
so
it just make you love him more?
So he made an extra $23,000.
He did.
I love
Yeah.
Tony Todd.
I do too, man. We got to watch Final Destination.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Good for him.
I know. All right. We talked a little bit about the sequel. Jordan Peele is producing it, but Nia DaCosta is actually directing it.
Okay.
So kudos to him for choosing a woman director.
Yeah.
It's going to be a spiritual sequel. So not technically a remake, not technically a direct sequel,
just
but it's
playing on the themes.
Yeah. Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Similar, yeah.
So basically don't go in expecting the same movie right. with like updated.
Now I have heard a rumor that it's going to be Candyman : the squeakquel.
Oh, is it?
Is that true?
The buzz
breaking news
is good on it.
Nice.
I love it. The buzz for the movie is good. Yeah. That's awesome. Well done.
So the plot, it's going to be set on Cabrini Green, but in the gentrified neighborhood.
Right.
And that's going to be a
probably
big theme.
The theme. Yeah.
That would be amazing. Like one side, like Nashville. Like
yeah.
One side of the neighborhood is upper class.
Especially East Nashville. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the other half can't afford their property taxes
right.
anymore.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Tony Todd is actually in this movie, but I don't know if he is playing Candyman. It might be because for a while they had cast two different Candymans and they were not Tony Todd, but we know that he's in it.
On IMDb, he is listed as someone and Candyman.
Someone and Candyman.
Yeah. So he has a real name.
Uh-huh.
And then he has Candyman.
Are you going to say what the real name is?
I am not. I'm not going to say it because I forgot it.
Well, so he is playing Candyman. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's going to be released as of now, June 12th, 2020.
Yep.
And those are my fun facts.
Nice. Thank you for your fun facts,
Jen. One of my favorite fun facts segments ever.
Nice.
And not just because I love Tony Todd so much.
So, Jen, let's do the scary scale, bro.
Hey, bro. Hey, yeah, bro. Listeners. Our scary scale is a ranking of how scared we were when we watched this movie. It's not the quality of the movie. It's how scared we were today when we watched it. Our one example is Ghostbusters. Our 10 example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. All right, Todd, what you got?
I'm going to give it a 3. It wasn't super scary, but there were some jump scares that made me jump. Ultimately, it's not super scary, though. Like, I think if you're sort of a horror virgin or you have a horror virgin in your life, you can be fine to watch this. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mikey, what you got?
I'm going to give it a 1.
Okay.
I was not scared at all.
All right. Fifth grade Jen gave this a 10 and said this was my scariest movie ever for a long time. I think today I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
Mostly because of that bathroom scene that I had to take a break from after we watched it because it's very upsetting. And just there's a lot of the themes that tend to be more effective for me. And that's our scary scale.
So this week you guys made me watch Candyman. What are you making me watch next week?
So we had this very special episode tonight for special Halloween time.
Yes, you're welcome.
Our regularly scheduled Monday episode is going to be an oft-requested movie for us. We're going to be watching The Shining.
Awesome. So I've actually seen The Shining. Mike, you've seen it, I'd imagine. Yeah. It's like an iconic movie. Like,
I
watched it back in high school. Yeah. I've seen it maybe once or twice since then. It's not a movie I seek out because it is scary.
Yeah.
But I've seen it a few times.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're going to spoil the book because we have to talk about the difference.
Yeah. So if you don't ever want to read the book like me, don't worry about it. If you do want to read the book, get to finishing. Mikey, finish a book for once.
It's so good.
And obviously watch the movie before next Monday. Yeah. You have the weekend to watch it.
Yeah.
So we're going to read a 5-star review that we actually got on Facebook
from
a new listener.
Is there an accent?
There is not an accent.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We'll read it like Candyman.
No. No, just read it like
my throat needs a break.
Yeah.
So Lisa says, okay, I have been listening to these guys for 2 days straight while sitting in LA traffic.
That's
and she's
lot.
Been in traffic for 2 days, guys. Send food, send water. She needs help.
These guys are hilarious and informative.
Oh, thank you.
Of course, a couple of times I yell at the radio saying, wrong.
Hey, don't come here for facts, guys.
They're
fun facts.
Yeah, they're not factual facts.
Right. But then they correct themselves. Love it.
Damn right.
You're welcome.
I love the fun facts they give and how they say.
Hey, thanks.
What I say about movies. Great podcast.
We agree.
Nice.
By the way, 28 Days Later is not a zombie movie.
Disagree.
Hot take.
Yeah, that's a hot take there, Lisa.
Hey, but your opinion is valid and welcome.
Thanks, Jen, for saying that before getting into the review of the movie.
Woo, woo. I don't remember what I said, but I believe you.
But thanks, Lisa. We appreciate your review.
I think your take was that it was not necessarily considered a...
Technically, yeah, because
it's
an infected zombie movie. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
It's an infected movie, not a zombie movie. I can't remember. Guys, listen back to that episode.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a fun one.
It's been months for us.
Right.
And we've done a lot of these since then.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for your nice,
yes,
lovely review.
You.
And if you guys would like us to read your review, leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app.
Yeah.
Or, I guess, on Facebook or, you know, wherever. Great.
I wonder what kind of crazy accent you'll suggest next.
So we are a member of the Modern Horrors Podcast Network. So if you guys want to listen to us in their feed, you're going to get it every Wednesday. But if you want to get it 2 days earlier in our feed, listen to our feed and you'll get it 2 whole days earlier. But if you're listening to their feed, you are also getting the Modern Horrors Podcast, Death, Dying, and Other Things, and the Final Girls Podcast.
Oh, you usually say the lovely Final Girls.
Well, they are lovely.
Yeah.
And if you would like to... reach out to us on social. We are at Horror Virgin or us individually. Mikey is at mrandolph24. Jen is at Jen Ferrazzi, and I am at Todd J. Awesome. The show account is obviously at Horror Virgin, and you can find us at horrorvirgin.com where you get Jen's blog.
Yep.
Mikey is is currently ghosting the blog, meaning he has promised to write stuff but hasn't. Yeah. And, but you can also get links to our merch store and awesome stuff like that. If you want to check out our Patreon to help support the show financially, that'd be great. We're currently saving up to buy better gear to give you guys better sound.
Yeah.
But if you can't support us financially, please continue doing what you're doing, and that is just telling your friends, family, and coworkers, or just shouting at people in traffic about how great the podcast is. We really appreciate it. We have been growing a lot recently. It has been very evident that you guys are definitely telling people about the show, and we really appreciate that.
It's crazy
to think that people like us.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's going to do it for us.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
And happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. I hope you're staying safe out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And take a jacket.
You're such a mom.
I know.
A fur coat.
I'm Jen.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your horror virgin Todd, guys.
We should dress up as each other for Halloween. So.
Oh, my God. I call Jen.
Woo! I'm Mikey.
I guess I'm Todd.
Oh.
Hi, everybody. I'm the horror virgin.
Have a great Halloween.
Sure.
And weekend.
Yeah, that's
weekend.
Fair. Yeah.
Bye. Halloween nerds.
What's your